You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Our next story is part of Interlochen Public Radio's series Irredeemable about juvenile lifers in Michigan. In the 70s, a store clerk was shot and killed in Grand Rapids. The story was in the newspapers for a while, and then coverage ended. But for the man who murdered the store clerk and the victim's family members, the story continues. IPR's Morgan Springer met the family at their home in Traverse City.
Okay, and this is...
Well, yeah.
That's the children.
That's me, Dan, and Rick, and our dog.
1968.
Dan Tholen sits in the dining room at his house in Traverse City. He and his sister are looking at old family photographs, mostly of their brother. Their brother was killed nearly 50 years ago.
That son of a gun didn't get to get old like us. Look at that. He gets to be this. Where is that baby?
This.
Yeah.
Nancy Sweeney holds up the picture. Their brother is young, handsome, and shirtless at the beach. He's lounging on a yellow towel and squinting at the camera.
Oh, come on. That's our baby oil commercial.
His name was Rick Tholen. Nancy says Rick was a lot of things. Dedicated to teaching, athletic, not perfect, but a good guy. She says he was also a ladies' man who sometimes had multiple girlfriends at once.
We had one in the living room and one in the kitchen at the same time.
Are you
joking? No. I would help bounce back and forth.
Rick was killed in 1970. It was a December evening, and he was working at M&J Grocery Store in Grand Rapids. He was in his first year of teaching high school English, and he'd picked up some extra shifts over Christmas break. It was around 10 p.m.
A robber came in, took money from the till, and shot him.
Rick was 22. It was 4 days before Christmas.
I mean, one thing, I remember sitting there staring at the tree thinking, well, maybe we should remove his presents from under the tree. And did. So my mom wouldn't have to.
This is a story about what happened to the man who killed Rick, Chester Patterson. It's also a story about lies and forgiveness. I spoke with Chester by phone when he was at Ionia Correctional Facility. He's 64 now. Back when he robbed the party store and killed Rick, he was 17. He dropped out of school and was messing around with heroin and alcohol. He said he robbed the store because he needed money to buy a drink. And were you drunk or high when it happened?
No, I wasn't.
You weren't. Why did you shoot him? You already had the money, right?
Yes. I thought he would be able to identify me since I lived in the neighborhood. And that's what I was scared of.
Do you remember what you were thinking after it happened?
I was scared and shocked at what I had done, because I found out later on the news that he had died. And I was pretty tore up about that.
After that, Chester was convicted of murder, and he got a life sentence. And unlike other people we've profiled in this series, he's been eligible for parole. He was first eligible after 10 years, but the first 10 years passed. Then 20, 30, and 47 years later, he was still in prison.
Like they say, you have to lay in the bed that you make. I made a very hard bed, and that's what I have to lay in.
Barbara Levine is the former executive director of CAPS, or Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. She says in the 80s and the 90s, parolable lifers like Chester were rarely released. But in recent years, she says things have changed.
Now you've got several hundred, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but it's well over 200 lifers who've been paroled in the last 10, 12 years now. And their recidivism rate is almost nil. I mean, you've got a 3, 4, 5 people who've come back.
Chester has a bachelor's degree. He's a paralegal, and it's been nearly 20 years since he got written up in prison, but still no parole. And Chester has a theory why. He says it's because he was not honest about what actually happened that day. Nancy Sweeney would put it differently. She says Chester's lied for years about how he killed her brother.
He maintained that it was an accident, that he fired his weapon as he left the store, and that it struck our brother in the head and killed him, and that he didn't know that he had committed that crime until he heard it on the news later that night. And we all knew it wasn't true.
Nancy says forensic evidence showed Chester shot Rick in the head execution style.
Oh, let's see. What exactly did I say? Because it's been so long, and I don't have a confession, a copy of it.
Right.
They asked me about it. I told them that I robbed a store and I fired a shot. And that was enough for them to charge me.
And is it true, had you said that your gun had misfired as you were going out the door? Like, didn't you, you didn't say to them what you just said to me? That
no, I didn't. What did I say? I shot through the counter. I can't remember the exact words, but I did not say that I shot him. No, I didn't.
And did they ask you and you denied it?
Yes.
Chester maintained it was an accident until he had a commutation hearing in 2010. Nancy describes how he came clean.
He was badgered heavily by the parole board to do it. He was pretty much told, and my husband and I were there hearing it, that this was his last chance. They were tired of hearing his lies, that they told him they knew he was lying. And I mean, finger in the face, bully type conversations he had to go through.
One parole board member said to Chester, quote, "All of the things that you've done in prison since 1996, when you started to get your act together, don't mean anything to me because you won't tell the truth."
He finally broke down and said, okay, yeah, that's what I did.
Chester admitted he shot Rick on purpose, not by accident. Chester says his reasons for lying changed over time. First, he says he was ashamed to tell his mother he had shot and killed someone intentionally. Then, after he told his mother, he says it was too hard in public hearings to tell Nancy Sweeney how he killed her brother.
Well, for me to sit there and drag her through that and make her relive that instant when I pulled the trigger, it's hard for me to do, and it's not like I'm not taking responsibility, because I've definitely taken full responsibility.
Chester says he learned his lesson at the 2010 hearing, and if he gets another parole hearing, he'll describe exactly how he killed Rick Tholen. He says it was a mistake he made as a kid.
You know, there was no sense to it. There was no reason for it. But I'm not that person anymore. You know, now you're dealing with virtually a senior citizen that's fully remorseful and sorry for the hurt that I've caused. And I would like their forgiveness.
It's not my job. Nope, I don't need to forgive him. One way or another, what happens to him, and I don't hate him. I don't need to forgive him. I just need to know that if he's out, he's a contributing member to society and not going to cause anybody else any other anxiety.
I think he's asked in his letter if we would forgive him, but that's too trite of an expression. It just doesn't work. I'm not carrying any burden from it except for missing my brother. It's not eating me up. Anger isn't eating either of us up. So I don't know. That's one level of forgiveness right there, to let it go so it doesn't continue to destroy our lives.
Over the past 47 years, letting it go has been Dan Tholen's approach. He hasn't really kept up with Chester's progress or whereabouts. Nancy, on the other hand, has been keeping close track of Chester, and when there are public parole hearings, she goes.
I go to the hearings to put our brother in a 3D mode. I don't like the fact that Chester's letters are there and his physical presence is there, his wishes, his dreams, his hopes, and Rick is a one-liner store clerk that was in the wrong place at the wrong time and met the wrong people. So I feel like it's my job to introduce that board to the man that can't live and can't say he wants out.
I worry for Nancy mostly in that she's carrying a lot of pain. And it is difficult to do this, to face Chester and to face the issue. And I admire her for doing it, but I hope she can get over the pain.
Do you feel pain, as Dan's kind of saying, or how do you feel?
I miss what's not there. You know, I've said it before. I would have loved to have seen him have a family. I would have loved him to be another nice uncle to our child. So that is my pain. Chester Patterson is not my pain.
Dan says when it comes to Chester's parole, he trusts the legal system to make the right choice. Nancy is almost with him.
On this, we agree a good 90%. If I'm with Dan, if he is paroled someday, then I am trusting the people who know way better than I do that he could no longer be a threat to society. I currently don't hold that opinion after the two hearings I've been to and listened to him. I just don't know how you rehab yourself if you go that long telling yourself a lie.
After I interviewed Dan and Nancy this spring, Chester had his third public parole hearing. They were both there. And this time, Chester Patterson was granted parole. The parole board said they were reasonably sure he was no longer a public safety threat. Both Nancy and Dan say they expected this would happen eventually. Dan says for him, it's not a big deal. For Nancy, she says she doesn't feel great about it, but she hopes Chester can be an instrument of good in the world. Chester was released from prison at the end of July at 64 years old. For Stateside, I'm Morgan Springer.
That story is part of Interlochen Public Radio's series Irredeemable about juvenile lifers in Michigan. You can listen to more stories from this series by going to irredeemable.org. And you can check out pictures of Rick Tholen and Chester Patterson while you're there.